What's with you, kid? You think the death of Sammy Davis left an opening in the Rat Pack?
Welcome back to the Blood and Black Rum Podcast. I'm Ryan from CloseWaitation.com. I'm joined by my co-host, Martin.
How's it going?
Pretty good. We are coming at you with a new episode. And I think we are fulfilling a promise that we made, right? Like, most of the time we start off the episode being like, sorry, we're not getting to the movie that we said we were going to in the last episode.
Damn, it's old as time.
Yeah, I think...
Song is old as rhyme.
I think this time we are going to get to the, we are getting to the movie that we said we were going to do. And it's a pick that Martin had, and Martin tends to pick movies that go with a theme. And the theme generally, I think for, at least for this year, has been 90s nostalgia. Right?
Well, that's always.
We did Cruel Intentions not too long ago. What else did you pick for this year?
This year, I'm looking at the list right now. Dog Day, well, Straw Dogs.
That's not a nostalgia pick. I picked Straw Dogs, didn't I?
No, I did.
You did. Okay. Oh, that's right. No, you gave us Sam Peckinpah.
I gave a couple. You were
picks asking. From the oeuvre of Sam Peckinpah.
I picked a couple of Sam Peckinpah. It was because it was that and Wild Bunch, but a couple other, like, you were looking for a visceral film.
Yeah.
And we ended up picking Straw Dogs. But, I mean, this year, my pick so far would be Straw Dogs, the tandem pick of The Lighthouse, and Cruel Intentions. But Cruel Intentions has been something fun. There's something fun to it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Of these nice little films that, you know, you wouldn't expect from this type of podcast because we're supposed to be brows held high.
Well, we're a horror and cult film podcast, and these movies, I would say, are part of the cult film canon to some extent. Clueless got I blew the secret already.
Oh, by the way, I forgot Shaft. I also picked Shaft, too.
You did pick Shaft, that's right. Secret's out of the bag. Clueless actually got a Criterion Collection release.
Yeah, ha 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 ha.
And you know what? That's fine, because I do think that it does sit well within the cult film canon, and it's similar to other cult films that actually its director... Amy Heckerling has done, such as Fast Times at Ridgemont High. This was kind of news to me when I looked at it. I never really realized this. I guess I didn't pay attention when we did the episode, but she directed European Vacation as well.
Well, I mean, that could be anybody.
I know, but I just, it stood out to me. I was like, wait a second.
Yeah, I didn't know.
A woman directed European Vacation?
Yeah, I didn't notice that either until this film. But like you said, European Vacation could have been anybody. Could have been Chevy Chase's, you know, drinking buddy.
It's true. And not only that, but she also directed not one, but both Look Who's Talking movies. Look Who's Talking and Look Who's Talking 2. No, that was her... projects just before Clueless. She did Look Who's Talking 1989 and Look Who's Talking 2 in 1990. The films that everyone was asking for a sequel for. Please, please, please. You know, we need more Kirstie Alley as a baby.
Look Who's Talking.
And then in 1995, she directed Clueless. And then later went on to this movie series, did get a TV series as well.
Brace Face.
Brace Face could be. But no, no, it got an actual TV show from 1996 to 1999. Did you ever watch the Clueless TV show?
No, but I remember it. I remember being on, like, on the WB or something.
Yeah, I do recall it being on. And the thing about that, which I think is kind of interesting too, is that it had pretty much all of the people that were in the movie come back for a lot of episodes.
Except Alicia Silverstone.
That's true. Alicia Silverstone at that time, a little bit, I guess, got too big for her britches. And instead of coming back as Cher, she was doing other things. I think she was doing, like, the babysitter at that time.
Brace Face.
Brace Face.
Batman and Robin.
Yeah, that's true. Batman and Robin. Big one there. Kind of trailed off there because I know it's not true, but Batman and Robin the Stinkers. That's the one with soundtrack by Seal, right?
No, that's Batman Forever.
Is it? Oh, damn.
Kiss from the moon. No, that's the one with George Clooney and the bat nipples.
Ah, okay.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger punning it up.
Got that one wrong. So, Clueless, though, from 1995, I would have been like 6 years old when this released. So I definitely did not see this when it first came out. I think I probably was like probably like 12 maybe when I saw it the first time. I don't know, something like that. And actually, it was not on TV. I think I rented it. But Clueless did get quite a bit of airplay. But I think I rented it and actually watched it that way. How about you? What's your history with Clueless?
It was like a rental. And it was like 10, 11 years old. Obviously, same age as you.
Right.
Not anything I experienced as it was officially out. Got to experience a little bit down the road.
What do you think, as we're talking about, you know, like the experiences with the movie, what do you think drew you to this movie when you were like 12 years old? Because if you look at the poster artwork and stuff, it doesn't really scream like adolescent boy. But at the same time, there is something, I guess, alluring about the poster artwork where it's like, wow, look at these three hot chicks, you know, as you're, you know, a prepubescent, starting puberty, young adult. Maybe that's the attraction. I don't know.
Alicia Silverstone.
So for you, it was Alicia Silverstone. It was just the draw of.
Yeah, no, I had a big crush on her. I used to watch Brace Face on Fox. And her and Batman and Robin, as a like 10-year-old, 9-year-old me, was was memorable. Like,
right. So, I mean, I guess that kind of tracks.
Because Batman and Robin, they had the close-up of like everyone's ass and nipples and the suits. It's like, oh, Batgirl. Oh, what's this?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that kind of tracks because, you know, Brace Face was like probably 6 years later from Clueless. I think it came out in 2001. So, you know, you would have been around, you know, 11, 12 years old when you're watching Brace Face. Kind of tracks. You're just like attracted to Alicia Silverstone. You're like, you know what? She was in Clueless. Let me give that a go. For me, I was attracted to Paul Rudd. So Clueless it was, you know.
Don't lie. You didn't know what a creep young Paul Rudd was.
That's true. I think probably
what a groomer.
At the time, I don't think I knew who Paul Rudd was at all.
Hey, that guy looks like that asshole in Halloween 6.
Yeah,
even 12-year-old, he was like, hey, that guy looks fucking familiar. He looks like an asshole.
That's right. Yeah, for me, I don't really know what the attraction was, to be honest with you. I guess just, I don't know, thought it looked funny. I do know that at the time I had a pretty big crush on Stacey Dash. I thought she was very hip and, you know, she had like a nice different clothing style in this movie that kind of attracted me to her. Like almost like a, even though she's, you know, she's obviously like a rich sort of hoity-toity girl, she has like an alt type element to her as well that I thought was pretty attractive. Alluring eyes too. It's one of the better qualities of Stacey Dash. So yeah, Clueless, I think, was both of our part of both of our childhoods, really. And I haven't seen this movie for quite a while. It's probably been 15 years since I've seen Clueless.
Probably 15.
Yeah.
It's been a long while.
So it was kind of nice to come back and revisit it. It reminded me a lot of when we watched She's All That. You know, kind of same ideas and at times, similar aesthetic, obviously similar time period. And ironically, you were the one to pick that one too.
Oh, yeah. You had the wrong opinion when it came to Jennifer Love Hewitt and Rachel Lito.
It's true.
Are you prepared to apologize?
Sure. I will apologize. I'm sorry. She's All That was a good movie. Did enjoy it.
Matthew Lillard.
Yep. Matthew. That's true.
Paul Walker, rest in peace.
I still think that Jennifer Love Hewitt trumps Rachel Lee Cook, but...
Wow.
It's the bazongas for me. All right, so let's take a break real quick from Clueless. Come back to that. But let's talk about the beer that we have on the show today. I went a little risky today. Saw a beer that was there. I'll tell you, it was actually too risky for two different reasons. So the first riskiness was that I've never really heard of this brewing company at all. And it just happened to be on the shelf, and I thought it looked interesting. And also, for my childhood from the 90s, Ecto Cooler was a huge part of it. So to see this beer called Lacto Cooler, I was attracted to it immediately. So I had to pick it up. Not only that, but we've done a lot of IPAs of late and stuff like that. So instead, I wanted to go with something, a style that's a little different. So in this case, Lacto Cooler is from Voodoo Brewing, which is from Meadville, Pennsylvania.
In a town.
And this Lacto Cooler we have is the red version, because they do have lots of different versions of the Lacto Cooler. It's based on the can. It's based on the type of fruit that's in it. And it's a Berliner Weiss style ale. And so it was risky because it was expensive and I've never heard of this brewery before. So I decided, you know what? Sounds pretty interesting. Let's try it out. But then also it was risky because I checked the date on the bottom of the can, and it was canned on 3/24/23.
Oof.
And Best Buy was 7/22/23. And as we're recording this episode, it is now 7/26/23. So we're 4 days past the Best Buy date. But I thought, you know what?
Boys,
let's give it a try. Let's give it a try anyway. So that was the second risky issue with getting this beer. But I think that it was overall a big success. I think this is... Berliner Weiss is kind of pushing the style that it truly is. This is more like a tart sour to me. With a lot of strawberry flavoring added to it. So it's almost like a... like a sour, slushy sort of thing going on. You get a lot of strawberry flavor to it. It's slightly creamy, which I think is where that lacto element to the name is coming in. And it has a nice tartness, sourness to it that I think, aids in its drinkability. It's very, very drinkable. Goes down very smooth, very fast. It's really easy to pound through these. And at 5.5%, there's no real issue in doing so, except for the price, which can be a little expensive on the pricey side. But other than that, I think this is a really, really good beer. I've been enjoying it quite a bit. And I would be interested to see the other styles of their lacto cooler if we have them available to us. I didn't see anything else, any of the other colors, but I would try them if they were available. What do you think about the lacto cooler?
It's damn good. This is a really good beer. As you said, Berlin Weiss, kind of stretching it. Maybe it is. I'm going to be able to tell. Especially because Berlin Weiss sours are usually more subdued in their sourness. They're usually a little bit, you know, more weedier, breadier, with a slight, you know, sour taste to it. This here is more of like a, as you said, tart sour. But I do think it's great. They do a great job. It's creamy. It's got like a nice strawberry, nice, and I guess just strawberry. It's like a strawberry shortcake, like a strawberry eclair, ice cream bar, you know, like the chocolate one.
Mm-hmm.
With strawberry. It's really good. It's got a nice punchy strawberry taste to it, which is a good mix of like natural and artificial. Blends really well. Really creamy. Great mouthfeel. Goes down easy. Really enjoyable. It has nice, you know, slight tartness to it. So if you're not somebody who's really into overly sour beers, this is, you know, this is really refreshing. This is like a really good like dessert beer, something like, you know, you could have on a nice summer night to wrap up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really solid. I would like to check out the other ones. You know, they have like green, blue, pink, a couple other flavors. So if they ever came around, I would definitely check them out again. Again, that's Voodoo Brewing Company. I'm not familiar with them. Never heard of them before. Never really seen any beers from them. But I definitely would be open to checking out more stuff that they've done, because this is a really solid beer. Surprising, too. I didn't expect it to be as good as it was. All right, so Clueless. Clueless, I think, is kind of an interesting movie in the way that it presents itself, because it is similar in a way to Cruel Intentions, in that you have characters, very rich characters. You have Cher, Alicia Silverstone's character, who narrates the film for the most part to the audience. And right off the bat, when you first meet them, Cher, Dion, you know that they are extremely rich, kind of naive characters, but you do end up liking them to a certain extent. Whereas, you know, obviously in Cruel Intentions, the whole purpose of meeting these characters is to really hate them. You know, for much of the running time in Cruel Intentions, you just are meant to dislike them, and they're just awful people. In Clueless, you're meant to maybe find some common ground between Cher and the audience. Because, of course, she is still a naive character. She still has her own stuck-up ways. She still...
She has a naivete that isn't there, obviously, in Cruel Intentions with Sebastian and Sarah Michelle Gellar's character.
Yeah. And I think, too, in this movie, there's no malicious intent involved with Cher and Dion. It's for the most part. The things that they do that might seem, what's the word I'm looking for? Offensive to other people that may not be as rich as them, are not really like intended to hurt people. And in truth, they do have, for the most part, good intentions. But the things that they do end up being, they have negative consequences as well. So, like, one of the biggest things that they like, that the sheriff specifically likes to take on, is pet projects. And the idea of having a pet project of a person that you're attempting to mold is pretty offensive if the person really understood what you were talking about. So Brittany Murphy is that character.
It's not, but that's not what it is. So the 90s, they're doing God's work.
That's right. So you have Ty, who comes in, and she's a transfer student. And right off the bat, joking about not having weed around. And Sharon and Deanna are like, no, but we do have Coke.
Yeah.
As talking about the soda. She's like, you guys have Coke here? Nice little Coke joke for high school.
Which is prominently sponsored throughout this film.
Mm.
All the Coke products.
Yes, it is. There's like three Cokes on hand at one time.
Every time they're drinking, it's like, I wouldn't be anywhere without my Diet Coke.
But anyway, Ty comes in and, you know, she's obviously a bit more city-like, a bit more rustic. She certainly has like an aura about her that's more country than what Sharon Dion are used to. Northwest style. And so they take it upon themselves to kind of mold Ty into... This is where the she's all that sort of element comes into play. Of molding Ty into something...
better.
Yeah, I guess you could say better. What I really want to say, though, is dental secretary. Because Clueless does have the fashion of, you know, the 90s receptionist era of women who would go to school in their business casual, blazer suits. Doesn't look super comfortable to me. I don't know where the 90s got that from. That was like, you know what you're going to go to school in? Blazers.
Don't you love Alicia Silverstone's so 90s wardrobe selector?
The computer?
Oh. Yeah. Like,
there's one part where in it that I found is really funny where she's trying to mix and match. First of all, wouldn't you think that Alicia Silverstone, being such a
fashionista,
fashionista, would not need the computer to say, like, no, that doesn't match. That looks fucking stupid. Cher, that, what are you talking about?
Wait, I want to put these black and white stripes in my plaid yellow bumblebee dress.
I know.
Hold on. Computer says, mismatch. You bitch.
Yeah, computer says, get the fuck out of here with that.
That's where, with modern technology, Glenn Howerton from It's Always Sunny, his status would be like, you bitch. You think it's going to match, you bitch?
I know. I did like that, but when she's she's like,
oh, you computer, you're going to steer me in the right direction.
When she's cycling through, I did like where it was like, she's supposed to press the button to like match.
Yeah.
And she didn't even have to. There's like a little glitch with the computer where it did it for her. Like, it matched it already without her even pressing the button. It's kind of like a goof at that point in the movie, but I thought that was funny. Yeah, for whatever reason, Alicia Silverstone's computer is programmed to business casual, and that's all it recognizes. So, you know, she's wearing nice blazers that would not be out of place at...
those nice stockings that are, like, ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, stock.
It's like classic, I'm going to a Holiday Inn... hotel bar for my 25th anniversary from my school. Great.
Probably where ours is gonna be.
Yeah, right. But yeah. It is funny to see how much has changed from this movie too, up until now. I mean, whenever you watch 90s movies, there's always that element of
Whiplash.
Oh yeah, Whiplash for sure, because, you know, when you think about 1995, to me, I'm like, oh yeah, like 5 years ago, 1995. and 1995 is hard to, it's hard to grasp the fact that it's like 30 years ago. Horrifying, but it was. It was almost, this movie is almost 30 years old. Sorry, baby boomers, that, you know, that,
we're the boomers.
No, we're the boomers now. That's right. This movie's almost 30 years old. But it is funny when you watch it and you just see how much has changed, and what seemed in at that time is out, or actually now back in again. You know, a lot of times 90s fashion is actually back in again.
Kids with their fucking mullets now.
Yeah. I love, like, all the cell phones. There's that scene where all the cell phones are ringing. It's like a big ass fucking brick sitting, like, you know, if that. I like in the 90s how you had a phone, and it was an actual phone. It had heft to it. So if you needed to, you could also have a breaking and entering charge entered by using your, you know, your cell phone, because you could use that as a brick to just smash the window.
Lest we forget the object of telecommunications that was gone but not forgotten, Dahl Faison's pager.
Ooh, yeah. I did not know many students that had pagers on them, but, you know.
Well, this is in Beverly Hills. We're a bunch of poor hick fucks.
That's true. Did you see the cafeteria in this movie?
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Cafeteria, like, fucking has, you know, like a Target style fucking slushy machine in the back, and like juice machine and stuff.
Not only that, it's the one. Target now is our one lone pizza within a 45.
That is true. Yeah, that's the thing when you always watch these movies, especially, I mean, at least in this one, it's kind of, it makes more sense because all of our characters are obviously rich, come from, you know, privileged background, and we're in California. In other movies that you watch in the fucking campuses, it's a high school campus, but it looks like fucking gigantic ass college.
It's bougie college.
Yeah. Doesn't make as much sense. Here, at least, it does make a little bit more sense that we have this type of campus that Cher would be going to. Yeah, it's envious. Envious to have that. My work doesn't have as nice of a cafeteria as this fucking movie. This movie has a lot of people in it, too, that you may not have recognized at the time, but you certainly do now. So obviously you got Alicia Silverstone, went on to do a lot of different things. Stacey Dash didn't go on to do as much, but still had, you know, sort of an illustrious career. I'm surprised we haven't seen her pop up in the Hallmark movies. You know, much like our favorite Mean Girls actress.
Lacey Chabert.
Lacey Chabert, oh, that's right. Brittany Murphy, she died.
Wow.
So,
wow, can't say, you didn't say, like, was on King of the Hill as Louie-Anne Planner for years, right? She died.
Huh? It's true. But yes, she was on King of the Hill.
Which is one of my favorite shows of all time. King of the Hill's fucking fantastic show.
Speaking of,
if you haven't watched the new Beavis and Butthead, watch the new Beavis and Butthead. Fucking hilarious. Mike Judge is hilarious.
In perfect form on that one, huh?
Mm-hmm. Witty and smart. Yeah,
no.
You watched, oh, it's hilarious.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
I'm watching that in BoJack. It's great.
But you also got, you know, Donald Faison.
Most known for his line in the Bare Naked Ladies song, 1 Week.
What's the line?
Watching X-Files with Donald Faison with no lights on. And that's before Scrubs.
Yeah. So. It's hilarious.
You don't know that? You know,
I've never really known what he said there.
Yeah, it's watching X-Files with no lights on, with Donald fingers on.
No, I did not realize that that's what it said. Yes. I've always just mumbled it. So I didn't know the action character.
Yeah, that's the context.
Hilarious. You've got Breckin Meyer. Plays the skateboarding.
Breckin Meyer.
Huh? Yeah, he plays Breckin Meyer, especially at this time. Skateboarding kind of drugged out guy. Who's great? It's great because in this movie, there's a skateboard competition Breckin Meyer's competing in. And of course, Brittany Murphy's character Ty is, you know, vying for his affection as well. They've had an on and again, off again. She doesn't know who the fuck she wants to fuck. And so you got Breckin Meyer competing in this skate competition. It's hilarious because all he does is drop down from the half pipe, go do an ollie off the other side of the half pipe. And the judges are like, 9, 8. One guy's an asshole, says 7. You know, but a fucking 9? Give the guy a 9? He literally spent 2 seconds on the half pipe. He gets a 9? Apparently there was no other competition involved in this.
You know, if you watch skating today and the shit people are able to pull off, somebody who used to skateboard and stuff, it's kind of ridiculous now. Where the sport is now, like, it's Tony Hawk level shit. Like playing the game, like, you wouldn't be able to do that, and now people are doing it. Holy shit.
So basically putting Breckin Meyer's character to shame in this movie.
He would be nobody.
He would just be still petitioning for his Marvin the Martian sticker on the bottom.
Wouldn't even get that. Oh, you dropped in and got some air? Cool. As like a 5-year-old's doing like a 720 roast beef into a fucking rock and roll.
That's right. I know. That was just hilarious to me. I love the presumptuous 9 that they got from that.
He tried. Did a really good job. Hey, he said it is the amateur skate league. So, like, you know. True. The guy's like, yeah, he's the amateur. You do this in your free time, guy. Let's go. You did an ollie, you know, front side air. Yeah.
We still got Jeremy Sisto here. Jeremy, now pretty well known by baby boomers as the heartthrob, the middle-aged heartthrob on FBI, the various series that they have on whatever fucking CBS or whatever it is now.
I think you meant Law and Order.
No, I meant FBI, the fucking show that apparently has had the gall to create not one but 2 spinoffs of it.
I don't even know what the fuck that is.
Yeah, it's like it's another fucking procedural that's on CBS or something. Jeremy Sisto leads it. And I love this too because it's so funny to see, like, you know, Jeremy Sisto in something like Clueless as a young man. Obviously, you know, looking great in this movie, very young. And then you see him and he gets pulled into like the fucking Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade special where they interview him. They're like, hey, Jeremy, what do you think about this parade? And he has to go on there and act like he gives a fucking shit about the Pokemon Pikachu float that's coming down the road. Like, I love Pokemon. You know what? My son loves Pokemon. It's hilarious to me that they get these people on here, especially, you know, given their past in like cult films like Clueless. And then you got Jeremy Sisto, who's got to go super mainstream doing the Thanksgiving Day parade.
Like I said, I know him from, like, 2 seasons of Law & Order he was on.
Did he do Law & Order? He was actually a starring...
Yes.
Member of Law & Order, the original?
Yes, the original series, back when, like, Sam Waterston became the DA. He played Jeremy Lupo, I think.
I did not realize he was on Law & Order. Oh, yep. He did 64 fucking episodes of Law & Order.
Yeah, wow. He was, like, two or three seasons, he was cop.
Wow. In the later years, Cyrus,
Cyrus Lupo. Those were dark years. As one of the few people in 2010 in college that was still watching the original Law and Order, yeah, those were dark years.
That's rough. That's rough. And then you've got Wallace Shawn, who plays Mr. Hall, who's the teacher, the political discourse teacher.
I'm in Young Sheldon. And other things. You know me from other things.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I think you're right about that. With Wallace Shawn, you always recognize the voice and you recognize the face, but you're like, what the fuck was he in? I don't know. He's been in a lot of shit. I don't know. Like, what am I recognizing him from right now? I have no idea, right? But you always recognize him and you're like, I know that guy. I just don't know what the fuck he's in. Like, right now, if I don't click on this IMDb link and look at what Wallace Shawn was in, I can't tell you a single other thing that he was in.
The Princess Bride would be the big one.
Yeah. Young.
Because he's the one that's, yep. Because he's the big, inconceivable.
Right. But like, everything else, you're like, again, he's playing Wallace Shawn in this movie. I feel like that's just who he is.
Right. He's from Toy Story.
Right. Yep. Very, very recognizable voice. He's great in this movie. Don't get me wrong. It's just that it's funny. I just can't always pinpoint what he was in, but
everyone knows he's in the greatest Danny DeVito film of all time. Duplex.
Duplex, yeah?
Yeah, he was in Duplex. Which is also not Danny DeVito's best directed film. That'd be Death to Smoochie. When are we doing a Danny DeVito film month?
Good question.
That would be...
be a fun one.
Beautiful.
And then we already talked about this to a certain extent, but Paul Rudd is also in this movie.
Horrendous. One of Paul Rudd's worst outings, to be honest with you. He is such an insufferable fucking...
I think the word you're looking for is insipid, is the word you're looking for.
No, he's such an insufferable fucking douche nozzle in this.
The one thing that I really noticed about this movie, whenever he's in character as Josh... especially when they're in the car ride, he puts on this really annoying accent where he's talking like, I can't remember exactly what they're saying. Something about, I think it was about driving, and you can hear him put on this really annoying, like, over enunciated accent.
It's not even a specific accent, but you're right. Like, he's putting on like this over affectation on
pompous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, pompousness to it.
It just doesn't work. Because it's like, you're supposed to like Paul Rudd, and here it's like, what an insufferable asshole you are throughout this entire film. And you don't even really do much that should make you an insufferable gobshite, but here you are, an insufferable asshole.
I agree. I don't know why, but there is just something dislikable about Josh Schrau, and that's even before the whole, hey, I'm your stepbrother, but...
Hey. You divorce wives, you don't divorce children. Even though she was my third wife and he's your stepbrother, I divorced her, not the kid.
That's right.
Which, by the way, he does not seem like the man that would be like, after a divorce to say, yeah, I'm cutting ties with you, I mean, I'm not cutting ties with your stepbrother because I divorced his mother. He'd say, get the fuck out of my life. Like, you little shit. I got to pay for you now, too?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he doesn't seem like it, but he's actually a good dad, Who looks out for daddy's eating? Cher does. It's weird because you want to like Paul Rudd in this movie, and that probably comes from time, too. That comes from looking back on this movie and knowing the Paul Rudd of now. But maybe at the time... maybe that's why Paul Rudd had to get cast in shit like Halloween. Because someone saw him in Clueless and they were like, he's kind of unlikable. We got to give him, we can give him a part, but make it shitty. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just the fact that, like, you're right, he doesn't have a lot of screen time.
And it's technically his first film credit. It's even before Halloween 6. Halloween 6 came out the same year.
Yeah.
But Clueless is his first film credit.
Yeah. Maybe it's because, he just has that, like, pompousness to him. But whatever the case, he is an unlikable guy in this movie. And especially because later on in the movie, the film kind of shoehorns in this whole idea that Josh and Alicia Silverstone share actually like each other. And that kind of comes out of left field because for the most part, they just always argue with each other. And there's really not a whole lot of characterization thrown into the film about like, oh, this is the reason why they might be falling for each other. I feel like that part of it, part of Clueless, kind of left a little bit shady. Doesn't really cement that relationship between them.
Well, not only that, but the fact that Alicia Silverstone's obviously supposed to be somebody who's like 15, 16 years old. And Paul Rudd, like, he's supposed to be apparently like 18 years old.
Yeah, 18 or 19, I guess.
Yeah, he definitely is showing his age. By this film, he's almost 30 years old. So it's like, Alicia Silverstone's like 20. So it's like, it really feels it too when you watch him because it's like, God, you're like the oldest fucking 18-year-old college freshman I've ever seen in my fucking life, you know?
I know, and the other thing about this, about Clueless, is that the whole idea of Josh and Cher getting together is kind of weird. It is a really weird concept, and the film does not really bring that up that much. They are...
Spawned all the... You're my stepmom, stepbro porn. That's...
Yeah. Hey, stepbro, I don't know why, but I'm stuck in this washing machine. I don't know why, but I drove my car into a ditch, and now I'm stuck in it. That would be Cher in this movie. She, not being able to drive worth the shit. Oh, did you like, too, speaking of, some stereotypes of things, that the film does make mention of the gym teacher, and like most other gym teachers, she seems to prefer the opposites, the same sex.
At least it's more tastefully done than being like, she's a dyke.
True, it is. And actually, Clueless, for the most part, is actually pretty...
pro-gay.
Yeah, it's progressive in its approach to most things. It is pretty pro-gay. You don't hear the F word being thrown around.
Not at all. Like, we'll say... They just to say Christian Donald Faison, like, he's a cake boy.
They do say that. That's true. They do.
But they're not like most films of the time where they'd be like, he's a, you know.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, you mentioned about that, he's not like extremely like flamboyantly flaming either. Oh, except for the fact that he does hilarious when Dan Hedaya is like, what are you trying out for the fucking Rat Pack over here? You're going to take over? hilarious when he says that. But
Which is funny because I think, isn't he early to the Swinger Revival? Because the Swinger Revival is not until like 98 with like Lou Bega. So like,
yeah.
he's ahead of his time by like 4 years by running around. He's like the most Rick Astley looking motherfucker. And they're like, oh, he's so hot. Look at the way that he's wearing his pants up to his fucking nipples. And he's like, hey, you like Billie Holiday? And Cher is like, yeah, I like him. And he's like, ugh, as he's driving his like 1954 fucking Packard around. Like,
I know. That's pretty hilarious. That one-liner is actually really great. Caught me off guard. But yeah, I mean, I think the film is pretty progressive. It does like I said, Cher and Dion, they're not trying to be, you know, malevolent. They're not. They may do things, and there are things that you might, you know, not particularly like. People might take offense. But at the same time, there's not a malevolency here. And I like that about this movie because it does make it like feel very weightless. It's a very easy breezy watch. It's not like there's, you know, a lot of things to think about in this movie. It kind of just happens and you just enjoy it as it progresses. I will say the film likes to pick up and drop ideas quite a bit. And that's partially because of Cher as her personality. She picks up projects, she puts them down, she doesn't stick to them. But the film kind of jumps between different tangents quite a bit. So it starts off with her project with trying to get Mr. Hall and Miss Geist together, and then kind of jumps over to Brittany Murphy's character, Ty, and then it kind of jumps to her obsession with Josh, and it kind of all ties it back in at the end. All of those through lines are a little bit messy, but at the same time, I'm okay with that. I think that it works well because that's Cher's character. That's her personality, is to be a little bit messy. What do you think about the soundtrack on this movie?
It's great. It's filled with everyone's favorite 90s tropes. Especially, I love the fact that when we're introduced to Paul Rudd, in his hoity-toity college asshole, we just get to hear in the background, fake plastic trees, and you're like, ew, college rock. This time, you're like,
one thing I thought was pretty prescient was when, I think it's Breckenmeyer's character, he says, yeah, I was thinking, and I found that my kids are going to feel the same about Nine Inch Nails.
The way I feel
about the Rolling Stones, like my mom. I thought that was pretty funny because, yeah, they do know. That is how they feel about Nine Inch Nails now.
No, I think the soundtrack's good. It's just like an average, you know, just random assortment of 90s music. And it's like, yeah, it works. Like, you know. You got Counting Crows, Radiohead, Mighty Mighty Boss Tones. But yeah. Placed in the right spot.
And you know what, too? You got your
90s.
Yeah, you got.
Don't forget Coolio.
Your 90s jam, We're the Kids in America.
America.
Yeah, that's
nice. The nice 90s scoffication of that, yeah.
Yeah, that's one you always kind of got to get in there. I think even the Rugrats did that. That song at one point.
I think the Rugrats stole from Clueless, not the other way.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, I like the soundtrack. I think it's pretty good. Not over the top, like not bombarding you with all kinds of just different songs, but does its job. How do you feel about the sex talk and? In Clueless, is it too explicit for your Christian ears?
No.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's actually pretty tame in comparison to, you know, what we would eventually get with high school raunch.
And not only that, it's pretty smart about, like, you know, when they mention, I mean, we don't, like, at the end, there's no, like, at the end, like, Alicia Silverstone's, like, chair being popped by Kermit Paul Rudd, thank God. Well, I mean, like, Rayleigh points out, like, she's like, she's not interested. She hasn't found anyone that, you know, she feels like she wants to do that with. And, you know, if she puts that much thought into her shoes, you know, why else wouldn't she? And I've always felt, too, while watching it, though, Brittany Murphy as Ty makes it sound like she's not a virgin, like she has had sex. I don't believe that. I think that's kind of more her trying to assert herself in, like, oh, as you know, in a new environment. Because with how socially awkward Brittany Murphy is in this film, I find it really hard to believe that she would have had sex before getting to, you know, this school. Like, it's more of something that she's putting on.
Maybe there was a lot more coke in the other place.
Yeah. Wouldn't you agree? Like the way
how
just like, you know, kind of dysfunctional she is. You would be
Yeah, especially that encounter with Breckenmeyer in the lunchroom where she's like,
Do you want to see my Marvin the Martian that I drew?
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, I'm sure that was really tearing down the other school.
Yeah. Minnesota.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a little stretch. I do think the film handles that pretty well. I do like that one phrase. I can't remember exactly what they say. Was they say something like hymenized or something like that? Or she hasn't been hymenized or something.
She's hymenly challenged.
Yeah, hymenly challenged. I thought that was pretty funny. A lot of people, You can kind of tell that was written by a woman because most males probably cringe at the term hymen anyway.
What the fuck does that mean?
Never heard of such a thing. Is that a different form of amen?
Hymen.
That's what I say in church. Amen.
Rub the labia.
But yeah, I mean, I think that the writing by Amy Heckerling is actually pretty smart for this type of movie. I think it has a smart delivery throughout, especially for the dialogue, kind of snappy dialogue. I like the narration by Alicia Silverstone. A lot of times,
a lot of jokes in there that if you don't know when you know the punchline, you wouldn't get some of the Shakespeare references and stuff. And they're like, "Oh, who said that?" It's like, "Oh, it's a very famous line." Like, "Oh, who said that?" Cliff Notes.
Oh yeah, yeah, right. Cliff Notes. Yeah, I know. There is, yeah, in like the narration. I think a lot of people don't really. You know, we tend to find narration now as like a cop-out way of giving exposition. But I think in this case, it really works. You know, it's like almost like a diary sort of thing that Cher's providing as a narration. So I think it works pretty well. And again, like you said, it does provide a lot of jokes that you might not realize at first. Or they're subtle jokes that are sort of at the expense of Cher. Of her not understanding the privilege of her nature. So I think the narration works really well. I think the dialogue itself is you know, it's really snappy, and that's where we get a lot of the, you know, the humor from it. One thing we didn't mention when we were talking about Paul Rudd too is I love that he's growing a goatee in that one scene. She ends up shaving it later.
Yeah, just for that one
scene. That one scene.
But he's got that great beatnik, like, you know.
I know. Read episode by the pool in a turtleneck.
He's in a fucking episode of Doug with, like, you know, Judy, like you know, be like Judy's boyfriend, reading Nietzsche. He's like growing a goatee.
I know, I love that. I wish we had seen the full effect of the goatee. I think that would have been really nice. But yeah, another reason why Paul Rudd's insufferable in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you're not watching CNN. You're not watching what's going on in Bosnia. You fucking fool. It'd be great if the entire time we just call Alicia Silverstone. He's like, "You fucking fool." Don't you love too? Like, he's like supposed to be ambitious, and the dad's like, as a corporate lawyer, is like, "What are you going to do with your life?" And he's like, "I want to be an environmental lawyer." And he's like, "You fucking asshole."
Yeah.
I'm not sending you to college to go fucking learn environmental law. Go make money.
He's like, "You're going to waste your life doing that sort of thing."
Don't you love, too, at the end, where they're both, like, Alicia Silverstone and Paul Rudd are helping read over the documents for her father's important case, and met, like, the partners, like, reading over and yelling at Alicia Silverstone, like, "You fucked it up!" And it's like, and they're like, "Hey, man," like, Paul Rudd's like, "She didn't mean to." And he's like, "You asshole. Now we're fucked." And it's like, why is Alicia Silverstone looking over the documents? Fucking case you're going to take to court, you assholes.
Yeah, not only that, why is Paul Rudd working on it?
Yeah, it's like just a freehand. Yeah,
he's like fucking not even done with college yet. Why is he working?
He's a freshman. He's supposed to be a freshman in college.
Why is he working on this?
I hadn't even been in law school yet. And they're like, "Oh, yeah." Internships were a lot looser back then, you know.
Do you think that the final scene where with Paul Rudd and Cher, do you think that's earned?
No.
The relationship?
No.
You were saying it's off the show. You were saying it is so very creepy.
It's creepy and groomery, and it's like so slapdash, like in hindsight. Like, that's the worst part of this film. I think maybe if you had somebody that's more believable as, like, an 18-year-old. Like, I mean, I understand that in this film, Alicia Silverstone's 16, and she's actually, like, 20 years old. or whatever. So it makes it more palatable. But I mean, Paul Rudd at this time is almost 30 fucking years old. He comes off as pretty cringy. And like I said, it's not earned at all. Because Paul Rudd, throughout most of this film, bless the man's heart, he would hone his craft over the years. Is such an insufferable douchebag and really creepy. Like, all the moments where you see them connecting, like, the connections that they're having, like, he's really creepy. And not, like, in a, like, a, oh, you type of way, but it's like a, oh, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the worst part about this film. We both love Paul Rudd. Both Paul, you know, Paul Rudd stands. This is his, by far, I think, the biggest blight on his career, because it's just, like, such a, what the fuck are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
If they had somebody else to put into that role to make it a little bit more believable, yeah, you could salvage it. But I think the fact that Paul Rudd's supposed to be like an 18-year-old and he's like 25, you know, like he's, what the hell, Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused, like, you know why I like high schoolers? I get older and they stay the same age, you know?
Yeah, and I think, like, at the end, the reason why it comes off creepy is, like, because he does have that moment where he's, you know, he's talking with her, and he's like, but are you saying you like me? It's like, dude, just give it a rest, man. It's cringy as hell. You know, the way he's, like, coming on to her very slowly, and I don't know, it's just...
Especially, like, as we talked about, some of the lines he says, when he's, like, poking her, he's like, oh, you're filling out. And, like, when you first see him, like, talking to her, he's, like, poking her, grabbing her, like, by the love handles. He's like, oh, you're filling out.
Yeah, it's a, like, kind of the creepiest part of Clueless, I think. It would have been nice if they just weren't step-siblings. I think that probably would have been fine. You know, it was just some guy that was coming to stay. He wanted to learn the trade that... Something like
that. That makes it better. Yes, he would learn to climb my trade as a carpenter / a litigator.
Yeah,
I hope we don't have a daughter that I can fuck.
Anything else that we didn't discuss about this movie that you wanted to bring up?
So what did you think of the mugging in Down at the Alley?
Kind of comes out of nowhere, especially because this movie, for the most part, kind of avoids any sort of, like, grittiness to it. Yeah. Any sort of, like, you know, seriousness. So I don't know, comes out of nowhere, but I'll allow it.
What'd you think of the parties? Like, where were these parties when we were in high school?
I didn't have any parties like this.
These Scott-induced beer drinking hoopla.
I like that one scene where the guy's just puking into the pool, though.
And the one guy's like retching back, like, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah, no, that's pretty funny.
It's just like leaning over the pool, just like, bleh, bleh,
bleh. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, no, I never attended any parties like this, but good for them. These are like Woodsboro parties. These are like scream parties. Apparently, they probably shared a boundary here, Woodsboro and this I don't know, is it what town is this? Is it Beverly Hills specifically? Yeah. Woodsboro's right next door.
How'd you like Donald Faison when he's trying to show Stacey Dash how to use a map? That's some antiquated nonsense. Yelling at her. He's like, no, you're supposed to look at it like this. He's like, I'm looking at the map, right?
Yeah. The other thing, too, is you mentioned that stood out to me, and now I have some existential dilemma. I never went jeeping. I never got to go jeeping, which apparently in this film means you had sex in a Jeep. You got the Jeep a-rockin'.
Well, you could. You just need to get a Jeep.
I know. That's the problem. I never had a Jeep.
You don't want to spend $40,000 on a Wrangler?
No, I never had a Jeep. I never went Jeeping. I assume, though, it's probably more comfortable than, like, any other sedan back seat.
No.
You know, that you would use.
God, no. Absolutely no. There's less space.
You think so?
Y'all know, I know so.
At least you can have the canvas off on the Jeep, so you can, you're not misting up, like, the Titanic sex scene.
That's half the fun. But no, it's cramped back there. Not that I've ever had sex in a Jeep, but being in a Wrangler enough times.
Just more like an average-heighted man sitting in the back of a Wrangler. Like, it's cramped back there. I don't know.
And there's no fun to be had. It's, you know, it's... Stay away. Can't recommend enough to stay away.
All right, so we should probably rate Clueless. So, on a scale of 1 to 10 hot Miss Geists, got the She's All That makeover as well, what would you give Clueless?
I gave it a 7.5 out of 10. Clueless is a really fun film, and I think it's held up pretty well. It's a lot of fun. It's a quick, enjoyable little romp. A lot of, if you haven't seen a lot of other 90s films, or if you have seen other 90s films before you've seen this, a lot of it's aped from Clueless. Like, this film, like Whole Cloth, like She's All That, and later on Tina Fey with Mean Girls would, like, ape a lot from. Like, the structure and a lot of plot points, a lot of beats, very similar. Clueless is great. Everyone here does a great job. Alicia Silverstone is great. Stacey Dash does a great job. Brittany Murphy's great. Paul Rudd, criminal. Dolph Faison, Wallace Shawn. It's a great ensemble cast. Really fun, idea. It's, Amy Heckerling is taking her Fast Times at Ridgemont High film and ideas, kind of condensing them and making them into a leaner, meaner, more digestible 90s film. Works really well with Beverly Hills aesthetic and, you know, a lot of the 90s buzzwords and, you know, Hill Valley speech coming from this film. It's a lot of fun. It's nothing too serious, but it's a quick, fun, really enjoyable romp, and it's a comedy that I would say does stand the test of time. You know, it does have things like, you know, talking about homosexuality in the 90s. It's done a lot more tastefully and, you know, is more balanced and nuanced than when we did Cruel Intentions. It's, you know, very derogatory, you know, so... But Clueless is a really good film. I would recommend it to anybody who's looking for a fun 90s film.
Yeah, I would give this a 7 out of 10. I think that it's a fun movie, has a great cast, does a really good job with selling the comedy without having it be too mean-spirited, by laughing first at the richness of its main characters, but also by having its characters exploit other people. I think that it's all done in good humor and good spirits, and it all comes out well at the end. Amy Heckerling does a good job directing this, and really, you know, again, like you said, this is a good example of how to do a high school comedy well. You know, we've had quite a few of those in the past, in the 80s. Clueless is probably one of those ones that you point to in the 90s and say, yep, it was a great high school comedy. And like you said as well, it obviously inspired Mean Girls to a certain extent. I think this movie has a lot going for it. Bit of a muddled plot at times. I think the overall relationship between Cher and Josh is one that, as an audience member, you're not really rooting for it, at least now. knowing that it's kind of problematic, especially the grooming aspect of it, which is definitely sort of problematic. At the time when I watched this before, I didn't really realize any of that. I was just like, oh, that's great. They're getting together. You know, like, I don't think I even took into account the idea that they were step siblings, that there was sort of a power dynamic between the two. I didn't really take any of that into account. It's just like, okay, great. Nice relationship. Happy ever after. Perfect. It's all a little problematic now when you look back on it. But I think for the most part, this film has held up. It, you know, has its share of dated 90s references and things like that, but it all works rather well, especially if you're looking for a nostalgia trip. Clueless gives you that, and it's a fun movie. It's funny. I think people who enjoy Mean Girls will really like Clueless as well. All right. It's our Clueless episode. In August, we're going to start Red Hot 80s Action Summer, Part 3. But I know, I can't believe it either. But I'm actually going to be on vacation next week, so I'm not sure how we're going to handle that. I know. Not sure how we're going to handle that. We'll have to play it by ear and see. Maybe we can get an episode in early before I go. See what we can do.
We'll have to, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. And I'm not sure what we're starting with, but we're going to have a fun time for
Action Summer. So what are we doing? We got three of them, right? Commando.
Mm-hmm.
Police Story 2.
Mm-hmm.
Delta Force.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the fourth?
I don't know if we picked one. I don't know if we officially came up with one. We could do another another Schwarzenegger.
Well, if we're doing Commando, we're not doing another Schwarzenegger.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I forgot. Commando. We could do Rambo 2, First Blood, Part 2. Although, we're already doing a second Police Story, so if you want to throw that one in.
Over the top. Where Sly Stallone is a truck driver who arm wrestles.
That's true. I'm just looking at it. Aliens is technically an action movie from the 80s.
We already did Aliens.
I know. I was just saying. I was like, I didn't think about it like that. But yeah, no, it is. I was like, yeah, no. That makes sense.
I was going to say, we did Aliens a long, long time ago, my friend. Red Brown have anything from that?
The Road Warrior.
But we haven't done Mad Max 1 yet.
Yeah.
But you know what? Let's put that into consideration because we done Fury Road, but...
What, you to put in The Road Warrior?
Yeah, Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior would be, you know, that'd be fun.
It would bother me a little bit that we didn't do the first one, but...
We've already done Fury Road.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, we could put that in. To consideration. Yeah, I don't know. We'll talk about it some more. Figure out what our final one is going to be. But I think it's going to be a fun time.
Ooh, Red Brown, uncommon valor.
Or, you know what? We could just, for the third year in a row, try to do Roadhouse again.
Even though we did it?
Yeah. We meant to do it for the first one. We definitely did it for the second one. Throw a rewatch in there for the third one. Yeah, so you'll definitely want to check out our Red Hot 80s Action Month Part 3, and I haven't given it a Part 3 title yet. Maybe something like The World's Burning Up.
Yeah, Thunderdome.
So if you want to hear us talk about all these different action movies from the 80s, you should subscribe to us, leave us a nice review. We're on pretty much any podcasting app that you can think of. Go Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, our home base at anchor.fm, which is now Spotify. Any of them, listen to us. Subscribe. We are on Facebook and Twitter. You can find us on there, Blood and Black Rum Podcast. Probably not on Twitter for much longer because I think it's going to pretty much destroy itself at this point. Because now it's called X, if you didn't know that.
What?
Yeah, Twitter is now X.
Thanks, Elon, you douchebag.
Yep. We have an email address, bloodandblackrumpodcast@gmail.com. You could write to us, let us know what you like, what you don't like, what movies you want us to cover, and we'll take that into consideration. And find us on our Patreon page to send us some money that we'll use back towards beer. Anything you can donate is appreciated. It's at patreon.com/bloodandblackrumpodcast. So we hope you enjoyed our episode on Clueless. Hope you were just as nostalgic as we were for this. And also, why don't you write in, ask Martin for any other recommendations for the 90s that he might have. I'm sure he's got quite a few.
No, it's about
it. Just those. Cruel Intentions, Clueless. Those are the nostalgia trips.
And She's All
That. And She's All That.
Get them out of the way.
That's right.
We hit the zenith with the Faculty with Famke Janssen.
Oh, very true.
Swing! That's the answer, right?
That's right. So we will be back next week, hopefully, with our start of Red Hot 80s Action Summer and then moving into our Halloween episodes, so you won't want to miss it. So definitely keep checking back. Subscribe to us. Thanks for listening, and until next time,
take care.